Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Thanks for joining me on another show. My name is TJ Ryan. Rick is back for a second week. Rick Sonier from Munising, Michigan. He is an artist. He is a very creative man. He has been a performer for many, many years, the majority of his life. He has traveled a good part of the country doing so. And he's got a couple of discs which you could actually purchase. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But Rick's back with me this week. How you doing, Rick?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's warming up out here. This is good news.
Now, Rick is in Munising, Michigan, which is about roughly 60 miles from where I'm at. I'm in Escanaba, Michigan. And you've been in Munising for how long?
Since 1988, and in the Upper Peninsula since 1972.
Now, if you didn't see the first show, listen to it. We talked about how he was drawn to this house. And it's really weird. Don't you think, Rick? It's kind of weird how this all happened.
Oh, totally. Totally. It's just magic in my life. Inexplicable magic.
He comes up here, never been up here before, came up here fishing with his dad, saw this house, thought it was really cool. And then as they would come up here, he would always wake up at the right time and over the years to spot that house. It's like it was calling to you.
Yep.
And yep. It's called the Mary Scott House. How long ago was it that the Scott family had that?
That would have been in the late 1800s, and Mary passed away in 1959.
Now, how old was Mary when that happened?
90 years old.
So, and then there were stories that she did these readings. She was like a fortune teller or was like a psychic or?
Mostly tarot readings, and she was just incredibly accurate. Actually predicted several deaths, according to the families of people that had talked to me and relayed stories to me about Mary after I had gotten the house.
So when you moved in the house, you got a lot of people from the neighborhood that came forward?
Yeah, people around here don't talk about witchcraft issues and things like that, although Elger County seems to have been a bastion of witchcraft back to the pioneer days and its original foundings. There's remnants of the witch houses scattered around the woods here, and it was considered a very high-energy area even by Native Americans in prehistory that told their stories around campfires would set their setting in Elger County for a couple of reasons. One is the unusual height of land that exists in the Wetmore area that's 12 miles to Lake Superior for the height of land, and the rest of it goes down to Lake Michigan. And also because of the pictured rocks, because they are so formidable in terms of their expressive nature, carved by the winds, carved by the hand of God, if you will, and because of that, it's always been considered a high-energy area.
Mm-hmm. And some people will say, too, that as far as, like, spirit activity, the water and also, I think, the limestone that we have up here contributes to that as well. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that before, Rick?
No, but that's interesting. I'm right with you on that, yeah.
And you've had some strange things happen in the house, and others that had it before you had strange things happen. Now, when you use the term witchcraft, because I don't want people to hear this and go, he's a witch, because they may...
I'm not running for office.
They may view that that is considered like a dark thing. You are in no way connected to anything dark. Do you ever feel that way?
No, I'm all for positive forward movement, that's for sure. And I mentioned on the last show, the thing a lot of people don't realize, if they have the receptors open in their brain and they're experiencing unusual things, that it's like the alchemist stone of the old days, that if you want the gold, the alchemist stone ain't going to work for you. And it's, I think, the same thing with natural forces, that if you are looking to subvert natural forces, because nothing in nature is evil only exists in people, if you try to subvert those natural forces, they're going to come back and they're going to bite you.
So that's a really good way to put it, that if when you're following the natural way, and if you have the truest intentions, then that's when things will happen. And if you don't, it may not happen for you, or if it does, you're saying there's the big K, big karma coming back at
you.
Yep,
I do believe that.
So, you know, because Rick has a couple of discs we talked about, and one is called From the Devil. And that one sounds, I'm thinking, is he a devil worshiper?
No, nothing like that. Consider me a reporter and an observer. It is an exploration of sin and temptation. And in this day and age, I think that's something that should be looked at and be taken credibly.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people are being manipulated by forces that they're not aware of. And then your other one is called North Country, which was inspired a lot by your own backyard, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yep, that's the bright one. That's the daytime CD,
okay,
if you will. And, three songs specific relative to Alger County, one about Munising Falls, another one that's set in a place we call Paradise out here outside of Christmas, and a third one called Didn't Want the Beer, Just Wanted You, which is based on a local bar.
So we were going to talk about, now last time we talked about a couple of really... One story was that Bloody Run Creek story that was just really bizarre.
Yeah.
About when you were hunting, and 5 minutes you heard that noise, and I went online.
Well, a woman's voice, an operatic voice, not lyrical, not words, or very lyrical, the voice, but just like a singing operatic voice.
Just holding that pitch, you're saying?
Yeah. Well, a varying pitch, but no lyrics, no words, just like
kidding.
Very classic, in a sense, almost cliche, from well-done movies or whatever, but no movie was going on, no
right.
Wind in the trees.
Nobody about,
could,
around you. And so I went on and Googled the Bloody Run Creek, and I know that I don't think this is the same thing. There was an actual battle with Chief Pontiac, but that was near Detroit. So we've determined that's not it. But you feel that this had something to do with a Native American interaction with the white man.
Yeah, and I don't know which side was the victor. That information came from a letter that I had related this event in a letter to the DNR at the time. And again, that goes back to the late 60s, and I was surprised that I got a response. And the ranger that responded pointed out that other people had related unusual things happening to them in that area.
Now, this area is located near Cadillac, is that?
Between Cadillac and Baldwin.
Okay. Yep. No, in lower Michigan. And those of you that aren't familiar with that, that's over, I guess, on the western side.
The northwest quadrant.
It's probably a couple hundred miles. Is that a couple hundred miles from Detroit?
Yeah, that'd be about right.
Okay. So that's where he used to, as a child, you went there fishing and hunting, I'm guessing, through that area?
Yeah, late teens, which feels like a child to me now.
And things have changed a lot. You said since then they've obviously more people come in, and it's probably not what you remember what it once was.
No, the thrill is gone, that's for sure. It's the wilderness that was there has been... tamed and tempered.
Isn't that what's kind of neat about the UP? I mean, we have done some spreading out, but there still is so much that's left alone, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And even though people have camps back in these areas stretched out, there's still a lot of areas you can go to and just see nature uninterrupted.
Absolutely. That is the draw.
That is the draw up here. And you claimed that it really saved your life, didn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, again, coming out of ghetto Detroit and things like that, my values were, very, very survival-oriented value mechanisms, but survival on an interpersonal nature. And the UP did teach me how to share.
Mm. And that connection with, to me, it's like a spiritual connection. You have nature all around you.
Oh, absolutely.
And be able to get quiet and get away from the noise of the city.
Yep.
Now, you lived, when you were younger, as a child, You were telling me we were going to talk about this week in what was called the Vanderbilt House.
Yeah, that's what our family called it. It was in a little suburb of Detroit called Del Rey, which was basically known as a gypsy community.
And what was unique about this house?
Well, there were very classic hauntings, apparitions of a visual and audio nature that were going on. My folks were living there, and some offshoots of the family, because it was after the Depression and certainly hard times and things like that. And, my mother told, well, first when there were family, now this is relatively secondhand stories, because I was only born there and then up till 2 years old living there when we moved out. But the moving out is where the real punchline comes in. In the course of events, while my folks were living there, if they were having card parties or whatever was going on, they'd be basically living in the downstairs of the house. While those parties were going on, people would hear footsteps upstairs. They'd hear movement. They'd hear noises. They'd go up to investigate. Nobody, nothing there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on a regular basis. It almost became like a joke. It was something that you just lived with and just wondered what the heck, who the heck is walking around up there. Well, it came to pass that one of the stronger stories came from my mother that as a young girl, which of course in those times that meant she was in her early 20s or whatever, certainly in the age of reason, she was upstairs cleaning and cleaning up in the attic. And there was what she described as a cubby hole in the wall with a door, sort of like a dormer type effect, but for storage. And she went to clean inside the cubby hole one day. She opened it up, and she saw a person in the cubby hole.
Wow.
And she screamed, and she just, you know, started running for the stairs with her scream. My dad and her brother came running up the stairs and investigated the situation, and at that point, nothing and no one was there. Of course, no way out, and what would a person be doing just in the cubbyhole?
So it was an actual person that looked alive?
Well, she saw him quickly, screamed, and, well, him, her, whatever, she couldn't totally identify. Just that there was a person in the cubbyhole, and took off from there. There was another story my brother told about a cheesecloth curtain over a doorway that was blown by the wind that was covering my crib and giving me trouble breathing and things like that, and he sort of came to my rescue on that. The other part of, again, the apparitions would be based just mainly the footsteps and things like that that were happening just inexplicably. Well, okay, so you have all these stories or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now here comes the good part where finally the family felt they had had enough of that. And they were going to sell the house and move out.
Your family felt they'd had enough?
Yeah, they felt they'd had enough.
Okay.
And among those people was my mother's brother, who was a lifer in the Army, a sergeant in the Corps, and he fought in the North Africa campaign against Rommel, you know, and things like that.
World War II. I mean,
these were not shrinking violets. And my father, interesting sidebar to that, he was kicked out of his house when he was 13 in Canada because the crops failed, and he made his way into the lumber camps then into the Merchant Marines, was a Golden Gloves boxer through the Depression. That's how he supported himself. And when he got to Detroit, did things like help put the ball on top of the Penobscot building without safety harnesses, because if you fell, you just weren't good enough for the job in those days.
No kidding.
That's how it was.
Isn't it amazing what people did? I find that so fascinating.
It is, and the point there being that these were tough guys. These were not shrinking violets that were living in this house going, oh, listen to the footsteps upstairs. These were, you know, tough guys that were...
I think most people probably were back then because you didn't have a choice. Things were difficult, and we had gone through World War One, and many were going to go through World War Two, and that was going to change the majority of lives, and most people had to pitch in for that. We've got to take a break. We'll talk some more to Rick Sonier in just a moment. We're talking about the Vanderbilt house, which was haunted, and we'll tell you what happens with that in just a moment.
The punchline is good.
In just a moment.
Out there.
First of all, I'd like to welcome anybody that is new to my show, as I've noticed that we've had some increase in hits, and I don't know why that is, unless some of you are living in a foreign country and you're using my program to learn how to speak English, which is totally fine by me. All right? Get ready for your next lesson. You know, I know there are people that listen in other countries to podcasts. That's what I've been told. So they can pick up the language. And that's cool. I'm glad you're listening, whatever the reason. Hey, feel free, if you're in a foreign country or wherever you're at, to post a comment. Or real easy, just do something in the Dropbox. Just type in your name if you want. Or you can leave it at guest and a comment as to how you found this show and why you're listening, if you want. Again, don't feel any pressure. No salesman will come to your door. Okay, so Rick, this is part two of an interview because he told me a couple of stories off the air last week, and I wanted to continue those. But I'm going to play a little more from North Country. Those of you who are hardy outdoor individuals, I think you'll enjoy a couple of the songs that I'm going to play. This one is called The Falls, and I'll tell you about Upper Michigan. This is what's so unique, and I'm sure there's many parts of the world like this. Not necessarily many parts of the United States, but we offer, in this area alone, many great lakes, many rivers, waterfalls, just an abundance of nature. But also, it's not completely so isolated that there's, you know, if you want to have nearby towns, that's not too far away. But you also can lose yourself in nature. And we have skiing, snowmobiling, recreational type things, but also ways that you can remove yourself from nature. Most people that live up here for any length of time have their own camp. And a lot of people go to the camp to hunt, but a lot of people just go to it to get away and reconnect. And that's what I like about North Country.
Ever changing in the clouds, rainbows dancing through the falls. Quiet thunder rolling slowly down Forest Echo Halls. Down Forest Echo Halls. Evergreen crown, ancient cliff face, graceful granite boulders too. Simple pleasure, river treasure, setting sun and...
His name is Rick Sonier, and he is my guest again for the second part of this week, a guy who grew up in Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, if you grow up in this area like I did, you take it for granted. And it actually took me to move away to realize how much I really love this area. And even though I went to a state that's got a lot of beauty when I lived in Mississippi, you can't just walk through the woods like you can here, because you could run into some poisonous snakes or spiders or things like that. You don't have to worry about that in Upper Michigan. And also, you know, you feel there's a lot of private land up here. So if you know somebody, and there's a lot of state land that you can go on, there just aren't these kind of forests in most places. I'm sure there's other states. So it's just really neat. Now, here's another song, and we have a lot of people that love fishing up here. And they go to different lakes. They go ice fishing. They stay out on the ice way more than they should. Every year, we always have reports of people who leave their ice shacks out too long or their truck goes through the ice. Usually nobody dies, but they go out there because they just can't wait. And it's not always the wisest decision. But if you love that and you're connected to that, then this song is kind of related to that.
Turned off on a two-track in gray, over in black muck, looking for Trout Stream in my dirty beat-up truck. Past a lazy porky and a bouncing baby deer, heading deeper in the forest in the springtime of the year. But there's times I got to wonder why I didn't stay in a place like Mama told me, where I'd really make some hay.
That's Rick Sonyers, and that song was called Trout Pond. It's on his North Country disc, and a lot of songs about nature on that disc. And on the website, we have an email address. If you're interested in contacting him, he will send you the disc for $13. It's got about 9 cuts on it.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
Thanks for listening. My name is TJ Ryan. My guest, Rick Sonyer from Munising, Michigan, formerly Detroit area at one time. And he grew up as a very young child. He was, his parents were part of the Depression. You were born in what year was that, Rick?
1948, although I hate to admit it anymore.
Sorry about that. And so around 1950-ish, your family was living in that Vanderbilt house somewhere.
Yeah,
in there.
Actually, before I was born.
Oh, and, they were before you were born.
Oh, yeah, before I was born. And the audio apparitions, the visual apparitions. Oh, and again, people standing behind doorways was a big one. Where you would see somebody standing behind a door, go to investigate it, and they wouldn't be there.
Do you think, Rick, that people believed in that more openly back then? Because we all kind of just knew. It seemed like the people I talked to, they just knew. And it's almost like there's been a campaign to discredit people that believe in those kind of things.
Yeah, I feel that very, very strongly. Although in this house would be the mix of both, because I felt that my mother, well, both my parents were naturalized American. They were, my mother was old country from Lithuania,
mm-hmm.
and my father was from East Coast French Canada. And so they were raised with their receptors open, if you will, not being led to disbelieve these things, but to accept them as a possibility. Whereas the other section of person would be like my mother's brother, who was in the North African campaign, who had seen so much death and stuff that he was not into any spiritual vein anymore.
No.
Everything was cut and dried, meat and potatoes.
Right.
You know.
War had changed him. Who he was.
War had changed him and hardened him and made him very pragmatic.
Now, you were telling me that, okay, they had seen all these things before the break. We were talking about all these things that had been seen in the house. Your mother actually saw somebody in this little area that she was cleaning. She saw somebody for just a brief moment.
And when she would tell the story, you could just tell. I mean, her whole body reaction, her eyes, you could just see that. I mean, it was not something she liked to tell. It was something you had to draw out of her.
Not only that, but you think people back from that time period, they were pretty honest. There wasn't a reason for them to tell this kind of story. I mean, maybe some of them did it for attention, but there wasn't the mass media that we have now.
That's very true. And this was all inner circle, again, just among the family. I'm the one that's sort of broadcasting it right now. Otherwise, yeah, absolutely no attempts to sensationalize it.
I think we were a more humble, honest nation at one time before, sadly to say, media, and we fell in love with that and TV and all of the things that we have now, which have taught us how to maybe exaggerate or even create disinformation. But getting back to the story, so what is the final, what happens here?
So here's the punchline. So they get tired of living in that kind of a situation. They decide they're going to move out. They successfully sell the house. They move the stuff out, and they've gone to another place down the road. And 2 days afterwards, after my folks and myself and everyone moved out of there, the hot water heater in the basement sprung some sort of a leak and actually had a major explosion that took out part of the house.
Wow.
And when the workmen came in to repair the damage that was done, because it was a serious damage but not enough to trash the house, in the process of their reconstruction, they discovered the skeleton of a woman and a child embedded in the plaster.
Mm. Now, your mother saw a woman. Was that correct? Was that
she couldn't identify male or female.
Okay.
She saw a person in the cubbyhole.
And so were the reports of women or a woman being seen or a child?
No children as such, women and men, both. And again, not only the footsteps upstairs in the house, but voices of people upstairs as well.
Hmm. You know, I've had some experience with things over the year, but usually, you know, they're just kind of once in a while. I've never lived in a place where it was constant. Have you at all, Rick?
No.
So even the house that you live in now, where you think there could be some spirit activity from time to time, I couldn't imagine if you had that all the time.
And this was a way of life for them. I mean, they just accepted it. I mean, it wasn't possibly ongoing as such, but it would happen, you know, a couple few times a week.
Hmm.
Something would happen. And again, at major gatherings where there would be, you know, a dozen people downstairs, friends of relatives and so on, people from the neighborhood, these audio apparitions would occur in the upstairs area, you know, just inexplicably.
Yeah. And so was this stuff that led to your own exploration of what these kind of things are? Were you curious about that?
Oh, that would be more from the energy of my father and my mother, because my mother was a virtual clairvoyant. She could anticipate what I was going to be doing without her having the knowledge to know what I was going to be doing. I was going to save this for later, but I'll make it really quick. In the late 60s, whatever, as a guitar player, I could take off with $300 in my pocket and be lost in Canada for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they trusted me, I trusted them, so the need to communicate wasn't, or like phone calls or whatever, wasn't that essential. We'd do it on a timely basis, but not like reporting back and forth. Well, I ended up in Canada at one point, had some trouble that I won't go into, nothing too serious, but I decided, boy, I better get back to Detroit. And so I had been gone probably about a week or so and hadn't communicated with my folks at all. And as far as they knew, I'd be gone for a couple months. That was like status quo. I came back to Detroit. It was like 4 a.m. I came to our house. I had my key. I opened the door. I saw that the lights were on, and I thought, how unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I entered the house. My mother was not even shocked that somebody came through the front door, which we lived in a bad neighborhood. She was just glad to see me, and I saw that she was at the kitchen stove cooking pork chops at 4 a.m. And I said, what the heck's going on, Ma? What are you doing? She said, well, I knew you were coming home. I thought you might be hungry. And, I mean, this was like a given. This was like normal.
This is so what she did a lot.
That's what. If anything, I can point to outside of myself sparked my interest in spirituality and, again, the idea of seeing things that other people may or may not
did see.
It was from incidents like that.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. Did your mom pass away then? Is she gone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the mid-70s.
That must have been difficult for you, huh?
It was very difficult.
Sounds like you guys were pretty close.
We were all, myself, my father, and mother, very close.
Have you had any kind of contact with her that you could maybe think that maybe?
Just through dreams. Nothing that I would say is very specific. But that segues possibly now to one of the most striking things that happened was my grandfather's funeral, my father's father, and He was 96 years old, still working on the farm, when an accident happened. And one of those things with the tines that tears up the earth fell on him accidentally as he walked into the barn.
Hmm.
Well, he was suspicious of that. Everybody was suspicious of that. I can't say for sure. Nothing's been proven. But it seemed like my other uncles, who were in their 50s and 60s, some of them having cancer, they were tired of waiting for their inheritances.
Mm.
And again, this accident happened. And
wow.
Then my grandfather sent for my father. The telegram never came. The man stayed alive for 3 days.
Now, how old was, what year was this? You said he was 90-something.
54, probably.
1954.
54, 55, somewhere in there.
So you were a pretty young kid at the time.
Yeah, I was young, but I had reached an age of awareness, and I do have a strong mind, fortunately, or good memory of many events, not photographic by a long shot, but certainly a good memory. And that was part of it, because I was there when the priest told a story to my father. Now, my grandfather, again, he's laid up. He can't be moved. To move him is to kill him. So he spent 3 days alive in the house while he was expiring with internal bleeding, internal injuries.
Mm.
So he called the priest over. And again, I heard this from the priest talking to my father. Even though I was six, I remember it very well. He called the priest over, and he told the priest, he says, look, I don't want these people. He says, when I die, when I expire here, you put me straight in the pine box, you put me straight in the ground. I don't want these people looking at me. If they didn't want to see me alive, I don't want them looking at me when I'm dead. So you just get rid of me. Because if you don't, if these people embalm me, I'm going to stink them out of the house. Yeah, you know, sounds kind of funny. So,
and really, there's no way you could if you're embalmed, right?
Well, you're not supposed to, that's for sure. You're not
supposed
to
be no way.
They take out the bottle.
Right. Everything should be removed from you, so there really should be no smell.
Absolutely. And about that time, the telegram finally came. My father drove straight from Detroit to Tracadie after working a 12-hour shift at the factory. Drove straight to Tracadie without sleep, without stopping.
Hmm.
And we arrived there on the day that my grandfather had expired. They had sent him to the embalmers. They brought him back to the house, and he stank so bad that they sent him back to the embalmers.
No kidding.
The next day, they brought him back to the house, and that's when I heard the story from the priest talking to my father and so on. They brought him back to the house, and he stank so bad, they decided to bury him right then and there. So they buried him a day early. Realtors were already walking around the property.
No kidding.
Yeah, pretty crass. And so they buried him a day early. But the story doesn't totally end there. Now, we're dirt poor. And to get back to Detroit, we've got it. It's like down to the penny. We're not even eating properly or whatever until we get back to Detroit. We've got just enough money to make it. Well, as we're going down the road through New Brunswick, there's double blowouts in the back tires. Blowouts at once. And it's the dead of night. It's the middle of the wilderness back then, no one around. So my father tells me and my mother to stay in the car, and him and my brother, there's a light way down the road about a half mile ahead. He thinks he remembers that's a gas station from coming in. He figures he'll wake the guy up, try and get credit for the tires. So they go walking down a pitch black road. There's no moon out, no nothing, pitch black. My brother tells the story. He says it felt like somebody pushed him, and he fell into the ditch on the side of the road. As he fell into the ditch, his hand fell upon a $20 bill.
Huh.
Then he got up, he walked, he bent over, and he picked up another $20 bill.
Huh.
Then he walked back to the road, back to my father, and said, wow. And he didn't even know what he had until they got up into some light, and they identified it as two 20s. walked to the gas, to the light down the road that was a gas station, took the money that my brother found in the ditch, bought two tires, put them back on the car, and that's what got us back to Detroit.
Hmm. Now, this was your grandfather's property.
Yes.
And your dad, did he get any of that?
No, he didn't get anything out of it?
No,
not a thing. Not a thing.
Didn't his father want to give him something?
Oh, absolutely. And that was part of the deal with the priest where he wanted to talk to my father before he expired. And apparently the other brothers didn't feel the need to rush a telegram until they were sure that the man was dead.
And so they could get a bigger piece of the pie.
Probably. And my father was very altruistic about things like that. He wasn't in it for the money. He was always a very righteous, noble character.
Right.
Tough guy that he was. He was a very righteous, noble character.
Well, he probably knew that.
Charles Bronson reminds me a lot of my dad. The Charles Bronson movies. That's like
reminds you of your dad.
Yeah. The tough guy movies. That was like living with
the vigilante. Was that
absolutely? he would take up the cause of the weak and the oppressed.
Well, you know, it's just an amazing story, and even if this is not about paranormal, I just find stories about the way people used to be, the heart and the attitude and the spirit. And then also you can think about maybe what your uncles did. And I wonder what happened to them if they had something come back around.
Most of them did die miserable deaths from what I heard.
Well, and who knows what goes on if they have to pay any dues the next time around, if you believe in reincarnation.
Exactly. But again, the unusual part of the story being that the man actually got buried a day early because he stank so bad, and that was his threat. He made the threat to the priest to share with my father.
And then on top of that, was it him that guided your brother to find those $20 bills?
Go. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah, did that happen?
Those are amazing stories, and those are the kinds of things I like to...
Beyond the realm of coincidence.
Absolutely. So the name of your discs, and you have a third one, which you're going to remaster, I guess. Rick Saunier has North Country, and he also has one called From the Devil. That was from your time when you lived in Colorado, and you were telling me before the interview that you met some interesting people, right?
Well, yeah, it was a very cosmopolitan place. I was the manager, the guitar-playing manager of the Boulder Youth Hostel. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me. I was the center of attention as such, and I don't like look for that as a rule, but I got to say, boy, I had a good time.
But you you were inspired by some of the darker things that you saw.
Well, it was a very amoral universe, and I got to see it work through its machinations and observe it quite well. And that became an education for me. And whether you're in the Upper Peninsula, in the city life of the Upper Peninsula, or the city life of Santa Cruz, basically the same temptations, the same effects of sin, if you will, the same amorality or even immorality surrounds us all. And this is an exploration of those things. It's not a pontification of it. It's just an exploration of it and identification, like a definition of things, a definition of sin, a definition of temptation.
And we both agreed, because I've had people on my show talking about this before, and I've seen it firsthand, that people up here, as great as this area is, this also is an area of, I think, of a higher rate of alcoholism. And it just seems like when you get in more remote areas, people seem to worship alcohol more. And not that I don't have some beers from time to time, and I have nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
But in excess, or if it controls you, that to me, and I've always defined it this way, you lower your vibration. God and love is the highest vibration there is. And the more you pull away from that, you open up the door to others that are waiting and have been waiting and want to maybe have some control. And so you and I kind of both see eye to eye on that.
Absolutely, yep. Yeah, I was going to say again that the abuse of substances, it wears out the receptor. It's all about, to me, the receptors in the brain.
Being open.
And what you see that's actually there, not about pretending what's there or anything like that. there's enough out there that if we're willing to see it, if we're able to see it, if we develop ourselves as creatures that can absorb this knowledge and this information, we'd all be better off and better along the line for it.
Well, I am so glad that I got to meet you, Rick, and we're going to have to do this again. We're out of time. I would love to have you back again so we can just talk about things. It doesn't have to be anything specific. As you know now, my show is just more about conversation. Some of it is off the wall, a little bit bizarre, but, you know, I just even like the history, talking about your parents. You know, and I think about my mom, who grew up in Germany during World War II as a teenager, and her mother, you know, was killed during that war. And, you know, these hardships people have dealt with way more than what we are at this point.
That's for sure.
And they survived. And so I just find it fascinating. So, Rick, again, it's North Country. And if we want to send you an email, I'll have it posted. But what is your email address?
Sonier, S-O-N-I-E-R, at jamadots.com, J-A-M-A-D-O-T-S.
And you can order his disc for about $13.
Yep, that'll do it.
North Country has got some pretty cool songs on it, and you'll hear some of that during the show. Thank you very much, Rick.
Very much my pleasure, TJ.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.